you know, we definitely don't want anyone to be out of a lot of money and have their life, you know, really torn apart by accidents that happen, because accidents do happen.
Welcome to the Guides Gone Wild podcast. What is Guides Gone Wild, you ask? This is where you'll fill your ears and minds with the stories of everyday, extraordinary women who will inspire you to take your outdoor adventure game to the next level. Whether you're starting your journey from the couch or the trailhead, this is the place for you, so let's get a little wild. Hey there, welcome to Guides Gone Wild. This is Jen, and this week I'm back to kick off a second Guide for Guides mini-series, this time on liability insurance. Yes, I hear everyone's eyes rolling from here. It's the topic most of us love to hate or avoid. But for anyone who's thinking of taking folks outside, out of their comfort zones and into the wild, even if wild is a nicely manicured campground just off a main road, you need to protect yourself from the random things that might happen. But how? And more importantly, how much is this going to cost? I know these are questions that lots of guides struggle with, even when they've been in the biz for a while, and my guests for the next 2 weeks are just the women to help you find your path through all the regulations and jargon so you can be confident you're covered and be able to spend your limited time and resources on things that you love and are also important to your business, like creating the most memorable and amazing experiences for your clients. So let's get right into it. This series has two episodes. I'll be speaking to Miriam Ball from Alternative Balance and Angela Ziogas of Cross Current Insurance. As you'll hear, both of these companies have awesome stories from women trying to get their needs met and are based here in New England. Miriam and Angela are going to fill us in on what to look for, questions to ask, and some of the things you can do to protect yourself, your business, and most importantly, your clients. So enough stage setting. Let's get this dance started already. Alternative Balance is based in Henniker, New Hampshire, and is a membership group that provides practitioners with access to professional and general liability coverage in health, beauty, and wellness spaces that fall outside of traditional business liability models. So, for guides who are getting into outdoor fitness or yoga instruction, nutrition, or wellness coaching, massage therapy, Reiki, forest bathing, energy work, that kind of thing, Alternative Balance can be a great option, and Miriam has lots of insight to share today. If you're taking your clients fishing, hunting, boating, that kind of thing, you're going to want to tune into part two next week as well, because those service lines are right in the crosshairs for Cross Current Insurance. Yes, pun absolutely intended. And Angela is going to have great tips and perspective to offer as both an advisor and sportswoman herself. We've got a lot of ground to cover and not at a forest therapy pace. So let's get right into part one with Miriam Ball of Alternative Balance. Welcome, Miriam Ball, to the Guides Gone Wild podcast. Thank you for coming today to talk about insurance and small business insurance and potentially guide insurance from Alternative Balance.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Really happy to be here, and I'm excited to share what knowledge I can to help everyone in the industry and better navigate the insurance world, because it's not necessarily something that's easy or even fun most of the time. So
yeah, no, I think I think we all view it as this like have to have and not necessarily a want to deal with if we're not in that space. So I really appreciate that. So why don't we start out? Why don't you tell us a little bit about Alternative Balance and kind of how you got into this particular industry, and maybe also, you know, where you started lining up with some of the types of businesses that you are now, you know, helping to protect.
Sure. Yeah. So Alternative Balance is a professional group designed to support health, beauty, wellness, and fitness professionals. And that includes outdoor fitness professionals and wellness practitioners, you know, forestry, bathing, and people who do yoga outdoors, sometimes in the woods or in the park. And our goal is to provide liability insurance to protect those businesses and other business tools to help people grow and better manage their clients and ensure their client safety. So Alternative Balance has been around for a little over 25 years now. And the founder, Kim Henderson, she was a Reiki master, and she started Alternative Balance from an insurance perspective because she had a hard time finding insurance for her Reiki practice because nobody really understood what it was and what she needed. So she decided to start something on her own. And now we've grown to over 12,000 members all across the health and wellness space. So it's been really cool to see that grow. I've been a part of Alternative Balance since 2012. And before that, I worked for various insurance companies. I did risk management. I worked with an outdoor program at a company called Prime Insurance and managed the risk management department there. And I also worked on developing the policy forms and writing the policy language and figuring out how to navigate the coverage aspect of it from an underwriting and claims perspective. So I've been on the other side of it. I myself have always enjoyed the outdoors. I grew up camping and hiking, and my mom did first aid for like the Girl Scouts and things like that. So outdoor safety was always kind of a part of my life. So that kind of gave me a starting point for a special interest in risk management. So I kind of brought that experience to Alternative Balance. In addition to the insurance side of it, I am a licensed broker. And so combining those two things, I think really gives me a good position to help people in a lot of different industries understand how to better manage their business so that they don't have claims and don't have to worry about higher insurance premiums because they've not planned ahead for certain things. So that's kind of my story and the story of Alternative Balance. And yeah, we're excited to continue working with our members to grow their business.
I'm curious, and maybe you don't have as much insight into this whole aspect of it, but I'm like, what do you think it is? I mean, I kind of get Reiki because it was a little bit less mainstream, certainly several years ago than maybe it is now. But like, what do you think it is about the different types of activities and businesses that you folks have kind of developed a specialty in underwriting? What is it about them that makes them difficult for other companies to kind of comprehend? Or is it just that they're too small? Or, you know, like, what do you think it was that made it so hard for Kim to find insurance in the first place?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of parts to that. Like you said, there a lot of the people who do these services are individuals, not larger businesses. And having in the very beginning, especially back when Kim was trying to find insurance, having somebody understand the idea of a sole proprietor or somebody who was just themselves working on a contract basis with clients, I don't think that was nearly as popular as it is now. And so there's that aspect of it where an underwriter is trying to evaluate how much risk is contained within that one person's business and accurately identifying how much premium they need in order to fully cover the amount of insurance they need to provide. And so over time, having groups and associations put together to combine all of these individuals doing these services, putting them in a group makes it easier for an underwriter to quote the risk and understand how much risk is there and break down how much premium they need for this larger pool of people. So I think that's really kind of where it stems from and why it's gotten so popular for there to be groups that are purchasing insurance together.
All right. Yeah. Now I understand it more. I didn't realize at first. It makes perfect sense. It's kind of like, you know, Associated Industries of Massachusetts or any kind of like, or a chamber of commerce or something like that, where you're bringing people together to get some sort of, to pool all of them. So you're spreading out the risk and, you know, potentially getting discounts or, you know, understanding it more, and makes perfect sense in an insurance standpoint to pull together types of businesses that kind of share a lot of characteristics. So that's interesting. So this is a good segue into, you know, to your, what you were just talking about. Let's talk about information gathering. Like what is the information that people should be most prepared to provide or talk to you about in order to really give you a good sense of what they're going to need? You know, I think especially for businesses that are just getting started, they don't want to put themselves in a high liability position, or they want to, you know, be safe and they want to make sure they're covered, but they don't have as good a sense of kind of what to expect even from their own business as, you know, maybe they will later. So if people are trying to talk to you about this to start with, like, what are the types of questions you're going to ask and what kind of information are you going to be looking for?
Well, for alternative balance, we've tried to make it really simple and base things off of what we already know, which is why our list of outdoor guide services is pretty narrow, because we've gone with what we understand. And so we're able to kind of group that into everything else, which means we don't have to ask a ton of different little questions about that person's operations. But for guides who maybe don't fit into our service level, I can say that there are a few key pieces of information that an underwriter or an insurance agent is going to need. And that's going to be how many clients you serve per year, like how many participants you have in your activity. That's how they're going to phrase it. They're probably going to ask about what's your gross revenue or anticipated gross revenue. It doesn't have to be exact, but just kind of a general range of what you expect. So if you're new, starting out in the business, you know, you can always quote something low just to make sure you're not overpaying. And then you can also, you know, always change that in the next year, whatever. Same with the number of participants you have. You say, I plan to have 50 participants this year, or, you know, 200, whatever it may be, and then change it the next year. They're also going to ask about if you have equipment and or if you're going to be using your client's equipment, because that changes the risk. And things like trailers or mobile equipment, or are you using your own personal automobile to transport clients or equipment to and from locations where you're providing the service? Those kinds of things are going to be important for especially an insurance agent to understand, so that they know what kinds of coverage to quote for you. One thing that might be valuable information is that if you are using your own personal auto for transporting things for your business, you'll want to contact your personal auto policy holder or provider and ask if they can do a business use endorsement onto your policy. It's usually very cheap, but that's going to make sure that if you do have an accident while you're doing stuff for work, that will be covered, because sometimes the personal auto policy will exclude that. But that's something that you'll want to talk to your insurance agent about, just to double check.
Yeah, that's actually good. I'm like having all these nightmares right now. Like, oh, that time I pulled the trailer for, you know. So what are, to that end, what are the types of things? Okay, so let's take it to, you know, I'm a yogi. I do outdoor yoga. I do goat yoga at somebody else's property. And, you know, so I bring the mats and the blocks and, you know, or I'm going forest bathing in another area that doesn't belong to me, and people are going to come and, you know, I'm going to make them some tea or something like that. Like, what, hearing things like that, I think that those are both the types of business that maybe would fall under alternative balances coverage parameters. What kinds of risk and liability are you protecting them from in those scenarios?
Yeah, so our policy covers for general liability and professional liability. So general liability, I like to describe it as things that are more environmental. So if somebody trips over a branch, or they trip over your yoga mat, or a goat comes running in front of them and they trip over the goat, you know, those are the kinds of things that would be covered under a general liability. Professional liability is going to be if someone is hurt because they are doing a certain yoga pose and they get injured, like say they pull a hamstring or something like that. That's going to be something that is a professional liability claim. With forest bathing, it's, you know, sometimes some of the environmental stuff crosses over into the professional services. So in the forest, you know, you're saying, okay, look up into the sky and notice XYZ things, and someone's doing that and they fall, you know, that could maybe get put under the professional liability coverage. That's all going to be left up to the claims adjuster how they want to allocate that. Generally, on a policy that covers general and professional liability, you're going to have one limit that pertains to both of them. So you're not really going to have to worry about which one it is and how much insurance you have for general versus professional. But just kind of understanding the difference between those, I think is good. So the risks are really going to be broken down into those two things. You know, what can you control environmentally to protect people from getting injured? And how can you best provide your service so that your professional liability is reduced Because you've had the training and you follow best practices and things like that, making sure that you're following all the procedures and understanding what people's limitations are. So I always like to say that when you first take on a client or you have a list of people who are going to be participating in an activity, make sure you ask them intake questions about their physical ability to participate, what medical conditions they have, and really putting into practice limitations for people who aren't able to fully participate. You know, instead of taking a one size fits all approach, let's really focus on the individual client and what they can do and what they are wanting to get out of this service. And that's going to help reduce the liability and the risk that you have.
Okay. So two follow-up questions there. Does some of this requirement and or what you are providing, does it vary by state or jurisdiction in any way? And then also, and maybe you can answer this or not, like, where do you fall on waivers? Like, does it make sense to do them, to have them? Is that something that you guys assist with when people are doing things with clients? So those are my two questions, geography and waivers.
Those are good questions. So our policy, there aren't a lot of big differences between states in what they require. We see that more with massage therapists and other people who are very, very strictly regulated. And there's only a couple of states that are outliers in what they require. Like Indiana requires like 3 million, 6 million coverage, where every other state is like 1 million, 3 million. So understanding your own state's requirements for your licensure and insurance requirements, if they have it, that's going to be an important place to start. And that really comes down to researching, but you know, before you get into your business or as you're updating your license or whatever, just make sure that you understand what your state requires. But our policy, all it states is that you have to follow your state's requirements. So we have our set limits. If you're following your state requirements, we don't have a problem with that. Waivers, we definitely recommend getting waivers signed by your clients. You know, there's a lot of information thrown around often about, you know, courts don't accept them. They don't really recognize some of the language in liability waivers. But the key there is a lot of times clients who sign the waivers, they don't know what states and courts recognize liability waivers. It's always good to have it, because it's a really good deterrent for somebody suing you. And a lawyer is always going to go to that first. When someone makes a claim against you, they're going to say, oh, well, you signed this release of liability waiver and that you understood the risks going into this. So, you know, maybe they'll try and say, you know, we can pay your medical bills, you know, we'll do that. But really, you accepted the risk when you went into doing this activity. So let's think about this. And it really works a lot of the times. Nobody really wants to go to court. Most of the time, these things get settled before anything goes to court, which keeps claims costs low. It keeps everybody happy. You know, we definitely don't want anyone to be out of a lot of money and have their life, you know, really torn apart by accidents that happen, because accidents do happen. So having a waiver, making sure your client understands upfront all the risks of the activity and all of the safety protocols upfront, that's really important as well. The more someone feels informed, if an accident does happen, the less they're going to feel like something bad happened to them because of you. You know, preparation upfront goes a long way.
Yeah, that makes good sense. You alluded to equipment before and talking about the type of, you know, type of equipment that you have, like what among the coverage or it, like if is this in case your stuff gets stolen or damaged? Or, I mean, I know do you people, you don't necessarily cover people who are doing like boating and things like that. So that's probably a different kind of insurance.
The equipment covers that we have is called business personal property. And we do offer that for like gym owners and fitness professionals and nutritionists. Right now, it's not quite extended to all of our services. We hope to get there pretty soon. But if you do have equipment, you will want to find that coverage somewhere to cover if somebody steals it or If there is some sort of other calamity that happens that damages your equipment, so you can't use it, which means you won't be able to work. A lot of business personal property policies also include coverage for business interruption. So if something does happen to damage your equipment and you can't work, the business interruption coverage will come in and pay, like if you rent a space, they'll pay your rental, they'll pay your employee salaries, that sort of thing, until you can be made whole again with your business. With
our business coverage, interruption ones have a giant caveat, like does not apply to global pandemics. And
oh yeah. I mean, communicable diseases have always been something excluded from policies. So that's not new, but I think people are really more attuned to seeing that exclusion now. So yeah, it's definitely kind of a glaring hole.
Yeah. The acts of nature and diseases that spread like wildfire around the globe.
Yep. I wish that there were more options for coverage for that, but that's still kind of in the works, I think, in the industry as a whole.
Yeah. All right. One of the questions I think that MWGO gets a lot is just, you know, they'll hear people talking about getting discounts because they bought through this organization, that organization. And essentially, is there any, like, where should people look for discounts, or just by the nature of them coming to you, are they joining a group like that in order to get maybe a discounted rate on insurance?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
You don't want to shortchange and get something schlocky, but at the same time, it is always, especially if things just go okay for year after year after year, it is a painful time of year when you're like, oh no, I got to pay this again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It's never a fun time. So going with a group or an association is pretty much guaranteed to give you a lower price than if you went to an insurance agent and got a quote just for you, without having the backing of an organization. These rates that groups get are negotiated based on the sheer number of members that are participating in the insurance program. So think of it like going to Costco and buying in bulk. That's essentially what we're doing. That the ability to do that was put into place by a federal law back in the 80s. And so a lot of states are, it's a federal law, but they're kind of regulated by states. So there's a lot of power in purchasing as a group, thanks to this law, because their insurance was kind of getting out of hand, and regulators recognized that people were having a hard time getting insurance for higher risk things like hunting guides and fishing guides, boating, like river rafting guides, that sort of thing. I mean, there is a high risk there. So being able to put things together in a group and buy on a group basis really helped these higher risk industries get insurance that they need for a much better price.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you had talked before about talking to people kind of as they get started, or, you know, ways that you can advise folks to set up their business in a way that will really position them well for not only maybe getting the best rate up front, but then also reducing their liability over time. Mm-hmm. What are those types of things that you talk to your businesses about?
Yeah. So one of the big things is the waivers, which we talked about. Making sure that people have access to the waivers is something that we try and stay on top of. If we have a new service that we start offering coverage for, we'll put together a liability waiver for them. And so members can go into their account online and download those waivers and customize it with their business name and the types of services that they're going to be doing. So that's kind of step number one. Step number two is we like to do webinars on risk management from an insurance perspective, and understanding that the more safety protocols you can have in place, written down, you know, train the people who are working with you or guiding with you, say you're partnering with somebody else to do a two-part series, for example, you know, making sure that they have all their safety protocols in place as well. That's an important piece. Making sure that your documentation is correct, writing down who participated and when that activity happened, where you went, keeping track of that, making sure that your documentation procedures are also protected. So if you have intake forms where people are putting down their medical histories, it's really important to keep that really locked down so that that information doesn't get out. And then you have a cyber liability claim, for example, or a HIPAA breach. And making sure, like I said earlier, when you talk to your clients coming on, really outlining all the safety protocols before you get started, letting people know what some of the signs are that they're pushing themselves too far. So, you know, if you're teaching a yoga class or something like that, saying, okay, you know, if you feel like you're stretching too far, if you start to feel pain anywhere, just stop and go into child's pose and take a break, making sure they understand that that's okay. Those are really kind of the starting basic features of any service, but especially with outdoor activities. Those are going to be the really important things for making sure your risk is lowered.
Right. And so then when they're, you know, getting kind of ramping up, like what are the types of things that will trigger substantial increases in kind of what premium, you know, is there any, like the number of employees or like, I mean, obviously the type of activity is probably one factor, but what are some other things that might lead to, you know, you not being able to go to the store and talk and meet up with somebody and be like, oh, my insurance is this much. Oh, yours is that much. Oh my God. You know, why is mine so much higher? And then like, what are some things, some reasons that yours might be higher or a lot lower?
Yeah. I think coverage limits are going to be kind of the number one feature there with premium. If you start out at 1 million, 3 million, you might have a lower premium there, and somebody who has to comply with different premium or different coverage limit requirements, they're going to see a decent increase in the premium amount. So like if you go from a 1.3 to say Indiana's coverage level 2.6, you're looking at four times the cost. If you talk, you know, if you're going through an insurance agent, a lot of associations are going to have pretty standard pricing based on the service that you're doing. But if you do have to get something that's a little more customized, then keeping the limits low and complying with that company's risk management requirements, those are going to be the two things that really make a difference in the cost.
Yeah, I think that that had come up maybe in a question as well. What besides your like the your venue that you are living in, what else would drive you to have a higher limit? I mean, can certain, like somebody was asking about like, oh, I was going to lead a hike on this type of land owned by this municipality, and I don't, they're asking for a type of proof of insurance that I don't have. Like, is that something that is actually happening?
Yeah. Different government entities. So, you know, if it's a national park, they're probably going to require higher limits. I'm trying to think, there was a local park here that we participated in an event for, and they required limits. It wasn't nearly as high of a requirement as I've seen for larger parks like national parks, but I mean, they'll clearly outline that for you. But most of the time, those kinds of entities are just going to want to be listed as an additional insured on your policy. And I think there's some confusion as to what an additional insured really means. So I'll just explain that real quick right here, if that's good. Basically, adding this entity onto your policy as an additional insured, it doesn't give them necessarily the same insurance that you have. They are not a named insured on the policy like you are. But if somebody includes them in a lawsuit because of something you did, then their insurance isn't going to have to cover that. That's going to be on your insurance. So basically, they're assured that someone is covering their liability for letting you do stuff on their land. So that's really what the purpose of an additional insured is. And most government entities, most property owners will require to be added. So that is something to ask when you're looking for insurance, is making sure that you have the ability to add additional insureds. Some policies, I think it's pretty rare now, but some policies don't allow that, or they charge really high rates to do that. But I think for the most part, you should be able to add additional insureds on your policy and unlimited additional insureds.
Yeah. And that's like if somebody's asking you like, oh, I need a certificate of insurance, that's essentially what they're asking you to do, right? Is prove to them that
they are covered, have their name on. Is that the same thing, or are those different?
Usually a certificate of insurance means they want proof that you have insurance.
Okay.
If they need a certificate of insurance with their name on it, I guess sometimes they do ask in that way. That means they want to be added as an additional insured.
Okay.
So
and that shouldn't be, but that shouldn't be more than just like a call to your broker or whoever to say, hey, can you do this? Yes, that's great. Yeah. Here it is. Yep. I'm sending it over to you. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, so maybe give me some examples of when people do contact you and start the process. I know that in your particular case, I know a lot of alternative balances application processes is automated and online. So it's probably pretty easy, but like what would be the questions that you would hope people would be asking, or what questions do you always ask to figure out what they need and how to best, you know, provide what they need?
Yeah. So a couple of the things I think I've mentioned already, like asking if they use any mobile equipment or their auto, if they have a trailer, just to make sure we can get them to the right people for that coverage if they need it. You'd also want to ask, again, the additional insured thing, that's important. Asking what coverages are included. So general liability or professional liability or both. Is there additional coverage for defense costs? Sometimes people don't very clearly outline on the policy if coverage for defense costs is included in that coverage. So as opposed to just the liability portion, you know, do they cover anything that would require an attorney to step in on your behalf?
Oh, okay. I was like, what's a defense cost?
Yeah. Yeah. So if you
are you an MMA fighter? No. Okay. You're not a fighter.
Yeah. So it's really, the defense cost is really going to be the first line of defense, I guess, for anything, any claim of injury or any request for compensation that you might get. The attorney and that defense of your business is going to come first. So that's going to be the bulk of what you use on your insurance policy. So making sure that you understand if there are any limits or limitations on how much money is allocated to defense costs on your policy. So that's a good one to ask about. It's also good to ask if there are any limitations on how many participants you can have, or if you need to update the insurance company on, as your business grows, do you need to report more participants or higher revenue, things like that. With us, that's not something that we require, but other companies or other groups that specialize in outdoor recreation or outdoor guiding, they might require that. So make sure you understand what reporting requirements you have is going to be important, because you don't want to give the insurance company any reason to have a problem with the services that you're providing. I think
those are going to be somebody, something happens and, you know, you have 15 people with you and that somehow makes the problem worse. And they're like, wait a minute, you're only supposed to have four.
Yeah.
Like, that's not okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So just asking that and making sure you guys are on the same page essentially is going to be the most valuable step.
And then I just interrupted you. You were about to say something before that and I forget.
I don't remember.
Oh yeah. Well, I did remember what I was going to ask you before. So, and I kind of know the answer to this, I think, but I want to hear you. I just confirm that. So in the event of you do want to do something in a national park, it's going to be something that you do once a year and, you know, it's for whatever it's a one and out, but if they are requiring this extra insurance, there's no way to do that on a temporary basis, or is there, like for that event and then to go back to what you were covering before that was not as expensive?
I think the best way to do that is to use a company that provides event insurance. So there are very quick and easy online options for getting event insurance, and you're going to be able to customize the limits more just for that event. So you can pay the one-time fee and then you can, you know, charge your clients according to how much that's going to cost you and plan ahead for that. So it's very easy to get a quote for event insurance, and that's going to be the best way to go for those situations.
Okay, cool. That was not the answer I expected. So that's actually awesome. So you can kind of keep your status quo insurance for the things that you do all the time and then just get a special kind of opportunity type thing.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. That's good. What do you think are red flags for people? Like if they're starting a dialogue with an insurance company, a broker, and like, are there anything that they should be hyper vigilant about? Like if they get a certain type of answer or something that like, oh, these people do not have my best interest in.
I don't know that there's really any specific red flag responses. Maybe the first thing to do is double check the insurance agent's license number. It's always good to do your due diligence and make sure that the person you're working with is actually licensed in the right kind of insurance. So you're going to want property and casualty insurance. If you're applying for something that is significantly higher risk, like a hunting guide, making sure that the insurance agent is giving you the right application for that. So it's not going to be the same application as someone who runs a massage business. There should be questions about, do you get waivers? There should be questions about how many participants you have. Those questions that we talked about earlier, if you're not hearing those questions and you're not going through a group that specializes in that kind of insurance, then you're going to want to make sure they fully understand what it is you're doing. Because you don't want any surprises on either end, your end or the insurance company's end, about what you're doing. So just making sure that there's that clear communication, I think, is going to prevent any red flags from coming up.
Yeah. And it does seem that, you know, as much as we would all like to think that there's some miracle product out there that will be cheaper and awesome and whatever, chances are if something seems much less expensive than anyone else in your space is paying for it, it probably isn't gonna be what you want to have on your side if the crap hits a fan, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's too good to be true. It probably is.
All right. Okay. So that's good. How about like choices, trade-offs, anything that people should consider when they're thinking about, I don't know, getting insurance?
I think the biggest trade-off is going to be something you brought up earlier, which is the cost versus what coverage limits you have. You're not going to want to go below $1 million in per occurrence coverage. So for any one incident, you don't want less than $1 million. If you are doing higher risk outdoor guiding, like you wouldn't want to have, if you're doing river rafting, you know, you don't want to be going down the Grand Canyon in boats, you know, with 15 people and have $1 million in coverage. That's probably not going to be enough. You want to overestimate what can happen because those are very high risk situations. And you want to make sure your clients are going to have the coverage if something big happens to them.
Well, that's a good question. That brings up a good question of, so like, what is an occurrence? Is an occurrence one person in the boat having something happen, or is the occurrence the boat flips over and three people get hurt? That's all one occurrence. How is that?
I think it would be all based on the incident. So if three people get injured in one occurrence, like one incident, that would be considered one occurrence.
Okay.
But that is something to, that can change depending on the insurance company. I don't think there's a lot of variation, but they do define per occurrence, and that's going to be very clearly defined in the definitions section. So it'll be easy to find in your insurance policy, or your insurance agent can tell you. So like if you wrote into Alternative Balance and said, what does AB's insurance consider one occurrence? We'd be able to just copy and paste that for you and or direct you to the page of the policy right away. So they don't obfuscate that. It's very clear. But if that is something that you're concerned about, then I definitely recommend asking that question.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, at the end of the day, the recommendation is to actually read the 957 page document you get and then ask questions about it. But I'm already thinking to myself, oh, the definition section, which is like at the beginning, but I'd have to go all the way to O. So what page would that be on? And you
know, yeah, just, I mean, just asking your insurance agent or asking one of us is that's a perfectly fine way to find out the information.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel bad. We're all inured so much now, like just to check the box and move on. And, you know, we have no attention span, but I mean, a lot of those documents and paragraphs and paragraphs of information are there for a reason, because something happened to somebody at one point that seemed like it was a bad idea. So they're informing you about stuff, and it's kind of on you to, it's not always an excuse.
That's true. It is part of the insurance agent's responsibility to answer your questions and make sure that you understand the policy. So even if you wanted someone to walk you through each step, you know, if you have your insurance agent, like, ask them to do that, and they should be willing to make sure you fully understand the parameters of your insurance coverage. But I will say, if there are any confusing parts in an insurance contract, states side with the insured, because it is legalese, because it can be confusing. And there's been a lot of precedent for that. So there are some consumer protections for making sure insurance policies are understandable to the insured. So
Yeah. You're probably not going to get away with claiming you didn't understand the definition section, because that's pretty straightforward. That is there for your elucidation.
Yep.
Yeah. So another thing that popped to mind is, like, so you get your insurance, you start doing your business, and then your insurance, maybe when it comes time for renewal or something, your agent or somebody asks you for additional information, or for, asks you some clarifying questions on something that maybe hasn't come up before. That does happen, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And like, why would that happen? And what is the downside to trying to pretend that that didn't happen and not providing that information?
Well, it happens all the time. It's simply a process of the agent or the group or the insurance company making sure that they still fully understand the risk that's happening. It's just, it's like every year you'll want to shop around for your insurance to make sure you're getting the best coverage for the best price that you can. Insurance companies usually do that in an annual audit process anyway. So if there's additional information needed, that's just going to make sure that they are properly protecting your risk as fully as they can. So it's nothing to be scared of. It's common. There's no reason to withhold the information or not want to participate in that process, because it's only going to be for your benefit. If you're running your business properly and being open and honest about your business operations, then that's going to protect you more.
Yeah. I think sometimes, you know, as a business owner, your reaction is like, oh my gosh, why are they picking on me? But, you know, everybody gets spot checked, and it's really to keep the industry functioning, so that I imagine to keep it functioning so that you don't have to, like, literally redo the entire process every single year, and you can just kind of keep going. And what else, what have we missed? What else would you want to share about what it is that you do, or the insurance industry in general, that you think that folks might need to know? Anything?
I think my biggest thing is the risk management portion. Not a lot of insurance companies will directly talk to you about that part of your business. And you know, you are the expert in your industry. You're the one out there doing it all the time. But making sure that you have protocols in place for contingencies and things that, you know, accidents that could happen, and just paying attention to that part of it and being prepared is kind of the number one thing. And unfortunately, that's not a big part of a lot of the discussion in insurance when it comes to sole proprietors and individuals. So that's something that I'm trying to make more common and more available: safety plans, training plans, making sure if you have employees that all your employees are properly trained on everything, and doing it regularly. So it's not this one and done thing. It's let's continuously retrain ourselves on what the best practices are and safety protocols, and make sure those are written down. So that's really the only thing I wanted to emphasize. I think everything else we kind of talked about is general insurance information that is good to have, but the risk management part of it is something that should be highlighted more, I think.
Yeah, definitely. So to get more information about Alternative Balance, it's alternativebalance.com. They have a ginormous list of the types of businesses and services that they cover, which is very helpful, because it can be really hard, especially as an independent person or an individual practitioner, to especially in an industry that doesn't necessarily have a big giant professional association, or maybe not doesn't require any kind of licensing or credentialing that's, you know, national or something like that. I think it can be hard to be like, hey, so, you know, because you might deal with an insurance person, you know, yourself personally for like your house, but like they're probably not the right person to call when it comes to, okay, so now I'm going to start giving people massages in my house and doing their hair afterwards and whatever. So, you know,
yeah,
thinking about that. And also, you know, things like coaching and services that maybe people don't necessarily see as services, but if taken, you know, if something goes wrong, you want to make sure you are covered.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if there's a new service that someone's doing and they don't know if it's going to be covered or if they need a referral, we keep a list of companies that we trust to refer people to for insurance that doesn't fall under the alternative balance group just yet. So, you know, we always want to help people where we can in their business. So they can always email us at support@alternativebalance.com or give us a call or chat from the chat window on our website. And we'll give you the information we can to help you find the right place.
Yeah, no, that's great. Because again, looking at your list of stuff that you guys insure or help insure, I'm guessing a lot of these were not on anyone's radar, you know, maybe even 5 years ago.
For sure. Yep. And we get a lot of requests for new stuff that we haven't even heard of, stuff that's new in the marketplace. And so we keep a running list of services people have requested, and we talk to the underwriters, and every year, you know, we try and get some more things included and make sure that it would be covered appropriately under our policy. So we look forward to those requests, because it's always very interesting for us to look into those. And well, we actually, our office manager looks up and schedules us to go do employee experiences with some of these services that maybe we haven't covered yet, or that we do, it's a more recent covered service. Like we're setting up something to go and to do a salt cave therapy pretty soon. So we're all excited about that. But that just helps us understand these services better. And I'm really happy that we do that, because it's really important for us, I think.
Yeah. Well, I'm especially, I mean, God forbid, we don't want to think about this, but when things do go wrong, you know, when something does happen in a salt cave, or, you know, you get an infection from the henna tattoo or something like that. I mean, mm-hmm. And if there's a claim made, then I guess the second part of that is it getting taken care of the way you had hoped it would? And I think that's somebody's, I think that would be a fear in a lot of cases with these newer and alternative therapies, is like, okay, well, I'm buying this, but what's going to happen if I actually have to put a claim in? And, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to put you on the spot, but like, how's your experience? Your experience has obviously been okay so far, or else you wouldn't be doing this still, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We've seen very few claims, luckily. We have very good members who are dedicated to their business and their industry. So we really love that part about our members. But we, you know, accidents happen, like I've said, and the accidents that have come in as claims have been handled quickly and, you know, very positively, I think. So one of the purposes of us having this running list of services and talking to the underwriters about it is making sure that they are willing and ready and prepared to respond to claims that happen with that service. We put together this whole list of details about those services and send them to the underwriter so that they have a full, complete understanding of what's involved in that. And I think that's an important part of getting them ready for any claim that might happen. So yeah, so far, really good experience with that.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, cool. Well, this has been great. I'm like, I'm much more educated than I was at the beginning of this. So I really appreciate
awesome.
That.
I love that.
I'm just, this is one of those things I just do not ever want to think about. And
yeah,
I get it. We had a similar experience when we bought a property, and it was like kind of this really janky rental property. And I literally was like, let me find something online where they won't look at it for a few years. And then I'll just hope that nothing happens. And I'm like, oh my God, then when we finally were like, okay, somebody can come look at it now and then insure us. And they're like, ooh, that's the insurance you had before? And I'm like, oh my God, thank God we didn't have anything.
That's funny.
But I'm like, you know what? I got to grow up and not dodge this stuff, because it's wicked important. And, you know,
yeah,
you're going to put take other people and do fun things with them. You got to be ready. So,
yeah, absolutely.
All right, cool. Anything anything we missed that you can think of? I've taken up too much of your time already.
No worries. This has been really fun. I'm excited to share the knowledge I do have. And I really like doing things like this because I think it helps the industry and people be more secure in their insurance coverage, giving them more peace of mind that they know what they're doing, on a better level than what they did before. So Thanks for putting this together. I really appreciate you reaching out.
Yeah, I'm excited to share it and, hopefully just have it out there for people to find. Cause I think that this is one of those things that like, when you need an answer, you need an answer like right now. And it's hard to find, and you don't necessarily want it. And the unfortunate part is like, to your point, just pick up the phone and talk to us about whatever, and we'll talk you through it. But I think, I don't know, some people, myself included, feel bad when you start to go down a road with somebody and then you don't go all the way to the end and buy something from them. And so you don't want to take their information to begin with because you're like, then I'm going to feel compelled to buy something. Maybe I don't need it. So I think having a way for people to get the information is going to be good. So
yeah, awesome. Absolutely.
Awesome insights. I hope you agree. Let me know how this landed. Shoot me an email, guidesgonewildpodcast@gmail.com. And please also let me know if there are other Guide for Guides topics I should start working on for you. And of course, get more information about Alternative Balance at alternativebalance.com. I've linked them up in the show notes for your browsing convenience. And since we're talking about trips and guiding, I also want to close out by thanking our sponsor for the Guides for Guides series. That would be Evans Notch Lodge in Gilead, Maine. If you're looking for a quiet, off-the-beaten-track venue to host your next small group retreat, boot camp, mastermind, whatever, you should consider Evans Notch Lodge. With the Wild River right outside the front door and the White Mountain National Forest just down the road, the lodge is very well positioned for all kinds of rejuvenating wilderness experiences. But it's also close enough to groceries and restaurants and organized trail systems, baked goods, microbreweries. I'm getting a little bit carried away. Let's just say as a guide or trip leader, you will feel well supported with Bethel, Maine and Gorham, New Hampshire, both nearby. If it sounds too good to be true, it almost is. Head to evansnotchlodge.com for more information on their group accommodations. Whether you're looking for simple warm showers and beds or want your fridge and pantry stocked ahead of time, so there's one less thing to worry about, Evans Notch Lodge can build a package for you. That's it for today. I hope you'll tune in next week when our Insurance Guide for Guides gets even wilder with Angela Ziogas of Cross Current Insurance.